Thanks for joining us this morning. Before I introduce our guest today, I want to make a few announcements. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And on the 22nd, and save the date announcement, on the 22nd of January from 8 to 6 p.m., TPD will be screening the PBS Frontline documentary, Sex Trafficking in America. So mark your calendar, and you'll have more information on that as we get closer to that date. And I'll also have some of the TPD people in the studio so we can get some answers on what's going on with that. And I've been telling you for a couple of weeks now, Mod Pizza in Oro Valley is holding a fundraiser for us today from 10:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And we'll also be selling blue light bulbs so you can show your support for law enforcement. I'll be there. Most of my board will be there. We'd like to see you there too. So come and visit us at Mod Pizza up in Oro Valley. Today we have U.S. Customs and Border Protection. There's a difference. Lupe Ramirez Jr., he's the Director of Field Operations for Tucson. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Sherry. I really want to thank you also for what you do in supporting law enforcement as a whole. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Okay, since you arrived this morning, I just had a lesson learned. So I want you to explain to our listeners, what's the difference between you and the guys in the green outfits?
Well, thanks for that opportunity, because there's a lot of folks that are kind of confused, and they lump us all in the same uniform. And we are part of the same agency, you know, Customs and Border Protection, but totally different divisions. So the men in green and men and women in the green uniform with Border Patrol, they're responsible for, as their name implies, patrolling the border. So between the ports of entry, along the border, if anybody comes in illegally, that is their main focus. That is their priority. The men and women in blue are the customs officers and agriculture specialists at the ports of entry. So our job really is, our focus is on legitimate trade and travel. So we're responsible for facilitating trade and travel. So that means people coming in to the great state of Arizona to go shopping, conduct business or vacation, that show up at our ports of entry. We ensure that they're admissible, that they have the proper documents to enter. We make sure that they're not bringing anything dangerous, prohibited, or restricted. We are also the trade police. So all the merchandise that enters the commerce of the United States through the ports of entry are processed by the Customs Service. So we processed last year at the ports of Arizona, which there are 6 land border ports and 2 international airports, Tucson and Sky Harbor and Phoenix. We processed over $23 billion in trade.
Wow.
And collected over $139 million in duties and taxes for the government. So we are a revenue collecting agency. The agriculture part of our mission, we inspect in Arizona, the ports of Arizona, especially Nogales, is one of the largest produce ports in CBP. So all the winter vegetables that are raised and grown in Sinaloa and Sonora that come into the U.S. and go throughout the U.S. and wind up in people's tables, over 100 varieties of fruits and vegetables, our agriculture specialists inspect these for pest and disease. In this world of global trade, we intercept some pests that we, when the first time we catch them, they're the first in nation interceptions, which means that a lot of these pests are not from our region or even from Mexico. You have pests that come in, they're hitchhiking on these products coming in from Asia. And if there's no natural predator for these pests, it could devastate our industries in the U.S.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I don't think people realize, how significant that is, talking about bringing something in that wasn't welcome or deliberately put there.
Exactly.
So, you've got a problem with that. You said you, what is your territory? You're Director of Field Operations. What is your area? Is it Tucson?
Well, I am the Director of Field Operations for the Tucson Field Office, which encompasses the entire state of Arizona.
Okay.
So from Douglas in the east to San Luis on the west, and in between that we have Naco, we have Nogales and Sasebo and Lukeville, those ports of entry along the border. And then the airports, Tucson International and Phoenix Sky Harbor.
And some of the smaller airports.
Scottsdale and Mesa have smaller airports where merchandise comes in from Mexico.
Okay, what happens when you have a shipment of something that's coming over the border and maybe it's imitation Nike or imitation, you know, Gucci.
Well, that's part of our job. You know, we enforce copyright and trademark laws, so any counterfeits, you know, and again, this impacts American jobs. Everything we touch really affects American jobs, whether it's a merchandise coming in or whether it's a traveler's coming to shop and vacation. But in the area of copyright and trademark, it's important because you have companies like Levi, Nike, Ray-Ban, Disney, NBA, any of these. When someone steals that copyright and then makes a counterfeit, then it impacts the legitimate company and the workers that make those products. So our job is to ensure that doesn't happen. And the same thing goes with the, you know, like I said, we're the trade police, we're the tariff police. So anybody that's trying to get a lower rate of duty or a free rate of duty under a trade agreement like NAFTA, if you have a company that transships, they make it in another country, let's say China, they ship it into Mexico, change the labels and try and claim that it's a Mexican product made from U.S. components to qualify for NAFTA, if that gets by, that means that the company in the U.S. that normally makes those components and the company in Mexico that assembles them, both those workers lose. And so it's important that, again, as a trade police, we are also responsible for anti-dumping and implementing countervailing duties, which means that if there's a company in Mexico, I'm sorry, there's a company, let's say, in China, they make a product, they try and sell it in the U.S. for less than what it costs them to make it. So either the government is giving, you know, subsidies, or they're just doing it. And the reason they're doing it is to put out their competition. So if you know, you're an American company, you make the same product, and you have to sell it, you know, based on how much it costs you to make it. If you have a company that's undermining that, and they're coming in and selling it for less than what it costs them, their intention is to take out that competition, and then they can charge whatever they want. So any product can be dumped, whether it's electronics, whether it's pharmaceutical, machinery, anything can be dumped. And so our job, again, is to stop that. So if we catch somebody that's trying to dump a product into the U.S., we hit them with a higher rate of duty, which is called a countervailing duty. So it's a very high rate of duty, and then we also penalize them. So we collect not just taxes and duties, but we also collect huge penalties and liquidated damages. So, you know, at the ports of entry, when you see the men and women, you know, processing passengers, the part you don't see is all that we do in addition to that, like processing cargo and also intercepting narcotics. When you look at our priorities, number one is terrorism. And, you know, on the southern border, we don't intercept as many targeted people as we do at the airports, you know. But again, that is still our priority. And then facilitating legitimate trade and travel. And our other priority is narcotics. Right now, there's an opioid crisis, and nobody intercepts more opioids and other hard, dangerous narcotics. No other agency can hold a candle to the men and women in blue at the ports of entry. Last year alone, at the ports of entry here in Arizona, we seized over 10,000 pounds of methamphetamine.
Wow.
10,000 pounds.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. And think of all the lives you've saved.
Absolutely.
And every time we do a show about drugs, I tell people, stop supporting the cartel. It's just, it makes no sense. We have all these resources to help you get clean and live a productive life. Why are you supporting the cartel?
And it's devastating, you know, because I think the stats show that over 60 lives are lost daily in the United States to hard narcotics and opioids. And so the impact that has on families is devastating. So our job is, and again, when you see the narcotics coming in and the links that the cartels go to hide them in vehicles or strap them on the people and the techniques they use, they have a lot of money to invest in research and development and to create those compartments. And you'd be surprised how creative they get. The deep concealment these narcotics is unbelievable.
When we come back, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about how do you tell if you're buying something that's counterfeit, and, you know, educate us if you can on being a smarter shopper.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. If you have any questions today, the number is 790-2040, and our guest is the Director of Field Operations for Tucson. And he's with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And I like that. I like breaking it down. You're not Border Patrol. You're Border Protection.
Customs.
And I want to talk about, because you said that, you know, people have fake products that they bring in, you know, passing them off as these big labels. How do you tell the difference when somebody's shopping? How do you tell the difference between the real thing and... Because I know some of these are really good.
They are, and it's getting harder and harder for consumers to identify that. You know, for us, it's a little easier because we're inspecting packages as they come in, and you know, we have a lot of expertise. But, you know, you have to follow that old adage that if something's too good to be true, yeah, it is definitely it's too good to be true. So, yeah, you have to kind of, you have to be aware of that. When you go to buy something, especially online, that's when it becomes a little challenging because by the time you're looking at the product, you have it at home. You know, you need to check a lot of times with the trademark owner. So for instance, if you're looking at buying a Coach purse, you need to check with Coach online to see where they sell that product, who, you know, which stores are licensed to sell their product, and make sure you're buying it from someone that is licensed to sell their product. The same thing with any of the other products, because it's very difficult for the average consumer. They get online, they find something, what a deal, they buy it. When they get home, they can tell that it's not a legitimate product. Exactly.
And they're selling it at a bargain price, but if it's not what you want, it's no bargain.
It's not.
So, okay. Do you go through some kind of training with these different companies to recognize their products versus something else?
We absolutely do. One of the positions that we have in customs is called an import specialist. So these are commodity specialists. These are people who are trained specifically for certain commodities, and they become experts in that, not just in the classification and you know, but they are taught by the license owner. So, and they're more than willing to come and train us because they know that we're doing this on their behalf. So we if we have an import specialist who, for instance, is their commodity is footwear, you know, or shoes, we'll get Nike, we'll send their experts to come down and teach the import specialist and the officers doing the exams on what to look at. What kind of stitching, what kind of material is used, you know, the labels themselves. And the same thing with any other product, whether it's electronic or whether it's wearing apparel, we have Disney come down, Levi come down, NBA, all these different manufacturers and producers will come down and give us training on their products.
That would fascinate me. I would want to go through that training just as a consumer.
Yes.
You know, you go to these places and they're having, big sale, and it's not the real thing.
And the biggest thing is the quality. When you see what these, you know, manufacturers, the type of material they use, you know, and I don't want to push one brand over another, but, you know, when you see, you know, how they make their product, you can tell that there is quality in that. When you go and you pick up something that's a counterfeit, you can tell. It's just not, the quality is just not there.
Just not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful. Do you have classes where the consumer can come in and take a class?
I wish we did, but no. And I do believe that some of the manufacturers do that, but as an agency, we do not.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the drugs, because I know you stop a lot of drugs. Tell us some of the unusual ways people try to get drugs into the country. Through the port of entry. That's so stupid.
Well, you know, I would challenge people. I would challenge them to say, you know what, let's pretend that you're going to get into this business of smuggling drugs past us. And I would challenge you to think of a compartment in your car, you know, something you would use. Think of where you would put the narcotics to get it by us. And I would guarantee you that we have found it there. So if you said, wow, you know what I would do? I would take the bundles and I would heat seal them and I would put them right into the gas tank. Found it there. You say, well, you know what I would do is I would just take, you know, the floor of the car and I would put a false floor and I put all the old carpet and seats back on. You can't even tell, you know, it's not new upholstery, it's just an old car, and I would put it there. I'd put in the drive shaft, put in the tires, I put in the quarter panels, I put in the door, I put in the air conditioner vents, I put in the dash, the center console, I would put it in the
glove box.
That's the easiest one. We've had people take a running engine and set it up to where they could take the air intake manifold of that engine, block half of it off, put a compartment within that air intake manifold, put narcotics in it, put it back on the engine with the engine running. It's still running. They've put it in the wow. oil pan. They put it in the transmission. They've taken a bigger transmission and put it over a smaller transmission and used the space in between to put the narcotics.
These people have nothing else to do but plot and scheme.
It's money. That is their job, is to get narcotics in and then to try and get the profits back. So a lot of the same compartments that they use to smuggle the narcotics in, we find with money going south. So they'll use the same compartments to smuggle the money back into Mexico. So the same, like I said, whether it's tires, I've seen them make metal boxes and create like a bracelet that they attach to the rim and then put the tire on top of that and fill it up with air and balance it. And all four wheels will have narcotics in these metal boxes that are attached to the rim.
Oh my God.
That's why I say, I would challenge anybody to say, I bet you I could find a compartment that I could smuggle in that you wouldn't find it. I would challenge you to try and stump us, because we have found it everywhere.
You have dogs at the border.
We do.
Are they specifically trained for drugs, or are they trained for several things? Like, some dogs are trained for multiple uses.
Ours are primary. We have some that are trained for drugs, and then they could also, if someone's hiding a person, you know, but really most of our dogs are drug dogs. They are focused on narcotics, and it's every kind of narcotics. So one of the, you know, here lately, one of the big drugs that is gaining in popularity is fentanyl, which is a very dangerous drug.
Yes.
So that's been added. So, you know, our dogs, when it comes to marijuana, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, fentanyl, and they are amazing. Those puppies are really great at what they do.
I've seen them. They're beautiful dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. I just wondered about that, because there's so much that gets smuggled in through the border. Mm-hmm. They try.
Yeah.
Human.
And we also have dogs that are trained in currency. So the money that's being smuggled back into the country, they can smell the currency. Just like the drug dogs smell the drugs in the compartments, our currency dogs will smell the currency in the compartments.
So you have different kind of dog, for coming in and one for going out.
Exactly.
Okay.
And even for the pedestrians, some people will also try and strap the narcotics onto them and just try and look like they're a little heavier than they are, and put on loose clothing on top of that. And so again, you know, the dogs are really effective at picking that up as people are coming in within all the, we do thousands of pedestrians a day through a lot of our crossings. So they just try and blend in and mix in with the people.
How does lately we've been hearing a lot of really bad shootouts happening near the borders. How does that affect you?
You know, the most important thing for me is the safety of my officers and the traveling public. We just want to make sure that everybody gets home safe. So when the border violence is close to the ports of entry, that's something that really concerns us. Not only does it affect the flow of our traffic, you know, but it endangers the people in line. And sometimes that hurts. A lot of people like to go shopping. They like to go across to Mexico to go to the dentist, go to the pharmacy and go do some shopping, go have dinner. And so when you have border violence issues, that affects the people going into Mexico. Coming back, sometimes you'll get somebody who was caught in the crossfire, or maybe somebody that the bullet was intended for them, but they show up injured. They show up with a gunshot wound. And so that disrupts our traffic. We have to, you know, get that person to a hospital. If the person is inadmissible or they don't have the proper documents, I have to send officers to the hospital because they have not been admitted into the United States. They also may pose danger, so we have to send officers to go and babysit. The same thing happens when we get somebody come in.
There go your resources.
Exactly. You know, sometimes we have individuals who come in who have illnesses and or injuries, and they wind up getting sent to a hospital in Tucson, and so or Phoenix. You know, so we have to have officers not only transport them, but stay there until they're released. And that draws from my resources, my ability to open more lanes and process people faster. Right now, Christmas shopping is one of our biggest high traffic periods. So, you know, especially today is going to be one of the busiest days. You know, the Mexican workers received, they normally get a Christmas bonus about this time of year. And so you have people from Hermosillo and the local, you know, communities all coming to do shopping. here in Tucson and up to Phoenix and Scottsdale. And so it's a lot of traffic showing up, and you want to have as many lanes open as you can so that people aren't waiting hours to cross. But as you're, you know, as these things happen and you have to pull resources, unfortunately, it has that impact.
How many people do you have working for you?
In the entire state, I have just over 1,000 people working for me. It sounds like a lot, but when you figure the number of...
Three shifts
and multiple locations. For instance, just the Port of Nogales has the Deaconcini crossing and the Mariposa crossing. So the Deaconcini crossing is pedestrians and passenger, and they're open 24 hours a day. So that's three shifts there. Mariposa is pedestrians and passengers, open 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. But they also have commercial operations, so all the cargo comes in through there. And then we also have the rail, you know, so the train. We have, you know, rail cars that come in. We have...
You stop the train?
We check the train. So people, you know, so merchandise is being imported. You know, Ford Motor Company imports about $3 billion worth of cars and car parts on rail. So we have to x-ray and examine the train. We pull narcotics off of the train just like we do off of passenger vehicles. And then we have the Morley crossing in downtown Nogales that's open 8 hours a day. And the people that come in through the Morley crossing primarily going to shop in the downtown shops. It's there's a lot. And then again, that's just Nogales. You also have Douglas, Naco, Sasebo, Lukeville. A lot of people that go to Rocky Point to go vacation, they got to cross through Lukeville. And then you have San Luis, which also has San Luis 1 and San Luis 2. San Luis 2 is cargo. San Luis 1 is passenger and pedestrian. So, and then everybody gets 2 days off a week. So
no, that's not allowed.
Right. Well, our guys do work a lot of overtime, unfortunately. It's a tough job, but it's a great job though.
Are you hiring?
Yes, we are. And it, like I said, it is a great job. Matter of fact, the places that we're really focused on are Douglas and San Luis, and we're actually offering an incentive. So if someone comes on, they'll get a 10% of their pay as an incentive for 3 years. So it's not just a one-time thing, it's 3 years. And this is not for everyone. This is not a Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 kind of a job. But if you are interested in law enforcement, there's no better place to work than for customs at the ports of entry. When you look our salaries are very competitive. The overtime, anything you work over 8 hours is double time. And our guys do make a pretty good amount on overtime. And then if you're looking for opportunities, you know, as an agency, we have pre-clearance locations in different countries where we actually clear passengers that are going to fly into a U.S. airport. We clear them in that foreign country before they board the plane. So when they land in one of our busiest airports, it reduces the congestion. So we have pre-clearance locations in Canada, Aruba, Bahamas, Ireland, and we're opening more every day. So if you're interested in law enforcement, take a look at the men and women in blue at the ports of entry. It's a great job.
U.S. Customs. I used to know one of your pilots, Frank Kirsten, years ago. He just a really nice guy. I think he got transferred to Florida. So
yeah, why would you go to Florida when you can live in Arizona?
I know, right?
Exactly.
What's the matter with these people? Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a few. I just caught him off guard. Okay, thanks for staying with us. We have a caller on the line. Ingrid, what's on your mind?
A long comment and question combination.
Okay.
So you can pick and choose. And I wrote this out. Many border protection officers probably have a lot of valuable perspective and presentation ability. Do they want to become involved in the following issues? And maybe they already have. The issues are, as you've talked about already, product integrity, contamination, and so forth, labeling impersonation, and as regards general commerce, the tariff and loss leading of pricing and to destroy competitors. Are there people in the department who want to make public input in these areas? Because they're really right up against it. And sometimes people are in an occupation where they're, you know, it's a very specific occupation, but they also have other talents. And I personally would like to know how many of these people feel to come out and talk. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Ingrid. Thank you for listening.
Well, you know, that's a really great question, because we do have subject matter experts in so many different areas, and we do get invited a lot of times, whether it's to trade seminars or even just like sometimes, I mean, I've been invited by the Rotary Club to come and talk to them or any other club. So we welcome any invitation. If there's a group that would like for one of us to go and make a presentation, if they ask specifically to what area, I guarantee you we can find a subject matter expert in that area. We'd be more than glad to go and give a presentation and answer any questions they have.
And train the public.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a lot of what we try to do here, too, is, you know, open those lines of communication. Let's talk about what we can do to be better citizens. And you can't be a better citizen if you don't know what you're looking at. We talk about human trafficking and sex trafficking a lot because it's happening. People don't realize what they're seeing is the situation, and they can stop it.
Exactly.
So we want to talk about the impact on the border. If we had a closed border, the economic impact it would have going both ways in America and in Mexico. Can you address that situation?
Absolutely. You know, when I said that we process $23 billion in merchandise, that merchandise does not stay on the border. That merchandise goes throughout the United States. And, you know, everything we touch affects American jobs. And so, for instance, right now, you have the Christmas shoppers. You have people from Mexico coming down. And it's significant because a study done by the U of A, and it was several years ago, showed that over $7 million a day enters Arizona through the ports of entry. So when you think about, for instance, the gas tax. So we use the gas tax to fix our roads. Well, today our cars get much more miles per gallon and we use less fuel. The folks that are coming in to do their shopping, they fill up at our gas stations, they eat at our restaurants, they stay in our hotels, and they shop in our stores. So unlike American shoppers that can get online and go to Amazon.com and have a package delivered to their house, that's still not possible in Mexico. So they rely.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, they can't have, there's no next day delivery in Mexico. It takes, you know, if they order a package, it's very challenging to get it to their house.
Wow.
So they still rely on brick and mortar stores to do the majority of their shopping. So when you look at the impact, for instance, today, like I said, this is one of the biggest shopping days. It's the last weekend before Christmas. So I guarantee you, you're going to have a lot of people coming through that port of entry, headed down to Tucson, headed over to Phoenix and Scottsdale, that are going to do a lot of shopping. And this is also the time of year, you know, the Mexican workers, a lot of the twin plants, the maquiladoras, they give them their bonus during this time of the year. So they're going to come and do some serious shopping. And I know that whenever, if you do close the port of entry, which we don't do unless there's a natural disaster, it has a huge impact. A lot of these places, like, for instance, I know that in some of the border towns, their city budget relies primarily on sales tax. They don't have, you know, a lot of big property taxes or stuff like that. So trade and travel is the lifeline of our economy right now.
Okay. When you're talking about people coming in, what about going the other way? What about Americans going into Mexico? Don't they have an effect on their economy? I mean, significant effect on the border towns?
They do.
So
they do.
Why would anybody want to close the border? What would cause the border to close? You said a natural disaster.
Yes, I'll give you an example. You know, we have a monsoon season here. And in this part of the country, things flow from south to north. So if you travel from Phoenix to Tucson, you're going up in elevation. You travel from Tucson to Nogales, you're going up in elevation. So when it rains in Mexico, it runs from south, it runs down, it runs towards the U.S., into the U.S. And so when you have the monsoons and you have all that water, you know, just coming down and picking up everything that's in its way, and all of a sudden it shows up at the port of entry.
Oops.
And it just floods. And so thank God we haven't had anything like that in a while. But during my time as port director of Nogales a few years ago, we had to shut down the port for 8 hours because there was actually, even through the pedestrian area, we had 4 inches of water coming in. And so we just had to shut it down. We had to clean it up. We had to sanitize it. We had to, you know, before we could open it back up. And it was public works from both sides of the border. On the Mexican side, they were doing their part. On our side, we were doing our part. And it took us over 8 hours to be able to reopen the port.
Wow. I know when I went in, I haven't been down in Nogales in a long time, but when I was down there, the sidewalks all seemed to be crooked, and you know, you had to really watch where you were walking, otherwise you'd be flat on your face. And then I started hearing on the news about these tunnels, and I'm like, okay, are we walking over tunnels in this area? This is not safe.
Tunnels are very popular. The drug smugglers, if they're, you know, if we're doing a really good job at the port intercepting their shipments in cars, then they look for alternatives. And one of the things about that's unique over there is that there's a huge water drainage tunnel that goes from Mexico into the U.S. Years ago, it was determined that the U.S. would have a water treatment plant, and they would treat the water from both Nogales, Sonora, and Nogales, Arizona. And so what they'll do is they'll tunnel and then they'll tap into that drain. And it's a huge drain. It's the IOM. It's big enough to drive a car through.
Wow.
So they'll tap into that, and or they'll tunnel from one house in Mexico side to a building in the U.S. side, or anything they can. And it's like Swiss cheese in there sometimes, I think. You know.
And how long have those tunnels been there? When you discover a tunnel, you can't really tell the age of the tunnel, can you?
Well, you know, most of that falls under the purview of Border Patrol. And I will say they have a tunnel team, and they've done a really good job.
Tunnel team?
Yeah, they do.
Really?
They have a tunnel team, and they've done a really good job over the years of finding those tunnels and then remediating them. They fill them with concrete, and they have a good idea. And then also Homeland Security Investigations, which is our investigative branch. So, for instance, you know, those of us in uniform at the ports, we're like the police. And Homeland Security Investigations are like our detectives. So okay. If something is detected, they also investigate. And so between, you know, Border Patrol and Homeland Security Investigations, they've got a pretty good handle on where the tunnels, you know, where the old ones were, how long they were there. And so if anything else pops up, they're pretty good at finding it.
So they know what's going on.
They do.
So do they have to train for something like that? Do they take a splunking class?
You know, I'm not sure. You'd have to ask the guys in green. I know, but I know that the ones that do it, they're really into it. And they've got some pretty good tools also. They've got some tools that they use to help discover them. So
X-ray machines?
Some kind of machine. I'm not sure that they worked with the military to find some of these machines. But like I said, that's the green side of the house.
Okay, we won't talk about them. They're not here to defend themselves. So I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about your job and what's going on the border.
Thank you.
Thanks for staying with us. If you have any questions, the number is 790-2040. And our guest is the Director of Field Operations for Tucson for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. I want to talk about something. A couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I had Sheriff Daniels on from Cochise County. And he was saying that one of the problems with the border is they're recycling these children that don't belong to these people that are crossing, but they use these kids to say, we're a family, so they can get over the border faster. Do you come across that?
We do, unfortunately, you know, we do. And that's why we have, when you hear people talk about unaccompanied children, they think, well, the children show up by themselves.
Exactly, that's
no,
what
they,
I thought.
They become unaccompanied because they show up with a group claiming to be a family, and then you discover that they're not. You know, they're just using the children to claim to be a family to try and avoid deportation because they know that family units are going to be treated a little bit differently. You know, we work with ICRO and Health and Human Services try and find some place to hold them while they go through their process. So it's an advantage to them. They're going to try and play the system. So for us, it's very important, you know, that we take care of these kids. And we use different methods. I can't discuss everything that we do, but we do use different methods and we track them. And again, it's from all over the place.
It's not just Mexico.
It's, you know, we get, you know, here in Arizona, we get Russians, we get Brazilians, we get, I mean, it's like the UN sometimes down at the port of entry. We have so many different nationalities, you know, showing up, and the majority of them are showing up with children. And so it is a challenge because, again, when we have to process these folks, we first have to make sure that they're medically cleared. Sometimes they show up with either illnesses or injuries, and we have to take them to the hospital and get them cleared, and then we have to take care of them. Traditionally, our mission has always been dealing primarily with single adults, because you catch a drug smuggler, you process them, within a few hours you have them in jail. The same thing with an imposter. Somebody uses somebody else's document to claim that it's them, and, you know, we catch them, process them, within a few hours they're in jail. When you have unaccompanied children or family units, now you're waiting for Health and Human Services to have a place to put them, and you wind up detaining them. And our facilities were not designed to be detention facilities.
True.
And so that also pulls our resources to take people to get medically cleared, to take them to the hospital, to stay there until they're released. Sometimes it's weeks. And so when sometimes people say, well, why don't you open more lanes? Well, as we get more resources, and also as this, you know, the numbers have been going down on people showing up. And if that trend continues, then we can free up resources to open more lanes.
Yeah, this is, you need more people. You need to hire more people.
We do.
So, and anybody out there sitting on your sofa wondering what to do today, go apply for a job.
If you're interested in law enforcement, I mean, if you're a young person and you're taking criminal justice or you already work for law enforcement and you're looking for something something different, come talk to us. Come look at us.
You're in the military and you want to change the scenery.
Exactly. If you're coming out of the military, you're about to be released. You know, I mean, we have a lot of good jobs. Right now is the time to apply.
Yeah, it's a great time to apply. I want to know, when you have these unaccompanied children, how do you find their parents?
You know, a lot of times they have the contact information for the parents, because the parents, you know, might have come in illegally. They're somewhere in the U.S. and they're you know, this person that was claiming to be their family was actually someone that was being paid to take their children to their parents. So when you discover that, sometimes you have to call the parents to tell them, you know, we have your children. Will you come and pick them up? And the majority of the time they're going to say no, because if they're here illegally, the last thing they want to do is turn themselves in. And, you know,
they say no to picking up their own child.
They do. And, you know, so if you can imagine how that devastates the child. And, you know, a lot of times when you hear some of the stories claiming that, you know, that, that we don't treat the detainees well, they try and, you know, paint us all with the same brush. I think it's important that people know that just because we wear a gun and a badge doesn't mean that we don't have a heart. And most of my officers are parents themselves. And if you were to see what my officers do above and beyond for these children,
giving them their lunches, buying them blankets.
We just had the other day, we had two little girls that were being detained there. One of them had a birthday. The officers brought birthday cupcakes, brought her presents. You know, the officers will bring toys, they'll bring coloring books, they'll bring movies in different languages, so that we have a TV there. It's difficult when a child is told that their parents not going to come for them, and they break down, and the person comforting them is somebody in a blue uniform.
Yeah.
You know, and people need to know that you know, we have the best people in uniform at these ports of entry. They're compassionate, caring, hardworking people.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Charles, what's on your mind?
Hi. Objective, I've been looking at the issue of drugs objectively for the last 30 years, 20 of them professionally. And I have to ask you, is what percentage of the narcotics coming in to the United States do you think that we're actually interdicting? I know you can't know exactly, that's not a knowable thing, but if you had to take a swag, a scientific, wild, assumptive guess, what percentage of the illegal narcotics coming into the country do you think that you're getting?
You know, Charles, that is a good question, and you're right. It's a tough question to answer because, as we were talking about earlier, you know, the drug traffickers utilize so many different methods to get the drugs across. They use tunnels, they use aircraft, they use vessels. And then they use people and they use cars coming in. They mix it in with the merchandise coming in through the commercial environment as well. I think I would base it on the price. And unfortunately, you know, the price remains consistent. That means that there's narcotics consistently getting by and getting in. Now, how they're getting them in and where, you know, that's a tough one to answer. But you know, I'd like to see the price go way high, meaning that there's a huge demand and not a lot of supply. When the price remains consistently, you know, low, although it has been going up. I mean, it has been going up, so we're obviously doing some good. But there's just such a demand, and there's just so many ways for them to get it through that it's hard to tell. But there is definitely more work that needs to be done. You know, in the past few years, besides the dogs that we use, we're using some new technology, some low energy X-rays. We call them Z portals, and you don't have to get out of the car. You drive it right through. You'd have to go through that thing a couple hundred times just to get the same radiation that you get from going to the dentist. And these things have been game changers. I mean, when you can drive a car through and it X-rays from side to side and top to bottom, you know, it's really resulted in huge amounts of narcotics being intercepted. But I think that, you know, we're constantly trying to do better. And not just us, but other agencies responsible for the tunnels and for the air and for the marine environment as well. But it's a challenge, definitely a challenge.
Charles, you said that you were involved with the drug industry. How are you involved?
I did not say that.
Oh, what did you say?
I said I studied it professionally.
Oh, okay.
I did not say I was involved with the drug
well,
industry.
Well, studying
either
it.
Either legal or illegal.
Okay.
And I want to clarify, I detest intoxication in any form, whether it's with alcohol. I mean, a drink is a drink, that's fine. But alcohol to the point of intoxication or any form of narcotic to escape your life, I mean, that's why God made books.
Yeah exactly.
You know,
I'm with you.
I'm not in favor of drugs. I look at both the human and the economic capital we've invested in the drug war, and I appreciate your... I'm sorry, I missed your name, sir. Your
Lupe Ramirez.
Mr. Ramirez, Officer Ramirez. I appreciate your candor about the price of drugs because I think it speaks volumes about the fact that when it comes to the war on drugs, we lost it a long time ago.
Well, you know, like you said, though, you know, it's a shame that we lose so many lives to it. And I think that, you know, and those of us in uniform, we don't write the laws, we enforce the laws. And you know, our job is, you know, one of our priorities is to do as much as we can to stop the flow of these hard narcotics and dangerous drugs coming in. And we'll continue to do that. And, you know, one of the things that we feel very strongly about is not losing, especially, I mean, you know, any life, but when you see the age of some of the people we're losing to narcotics, and a lot of times it's the first time they try it, you know, especially, you know, with fentanyl, you know, the manufacturer over there, the fentanyl pill, when it comes in pill form, it's hit or miss. Some may have a lot, some may have very little, and it's almost like Russian roulette, and it amazes me that anybody with the information they have today, knowing how dangerous these drugs are, that they would even try it, but unfortunately they do. And so we'll continue to do the best we can to intercept these drugs. Like I said, we've had record after record. You know, when you're looking at over 1,000 pounds of heroin, over 1,000 pounds of cocaine, almost 1,000 pounds of fentanyl intercepted last year at the ports of entry, along with those 10,000 pounds of methamphetamine, you can tell we're doing more today than we've ever done, especially in the area of hard narcotics. But, you know, we consistently, you know, challenge ourselves to do more. And when we get more resources, one of the things that we ensure is that we maintain a high enforcement posture. We balance it with facilitating travel and trade, but we maintain that enforcement posture because it's affecting American lives and it's devastating.
Absolutely. Did that help, Charles?
Yeah. Do those X-rays also detect weapons?
They
and
do.
I'll take my answer on the air.
No, they do. They weapons, money, ammunition. They're outstanding machines. We really like them.
And you work with a lot of different agencies. You're not just down there on the U.S. border by yourself. You work with a lot of the other agencies.
We do the work for a lot of agencies that you know, obviously they can't
that take
have,
the credit.
Well, you know, we work together. We don't care who gets the credit. But, you know, there's a lot of agencies that, you know, we intercept things that maybe don't necessarily pertain to customs law, but it's a restricted or prohibited item, or maybe an individual that's part of an investigation. So we work with FBI, with DEA, with ATF. We intercept things for fish and wildlife. So endangered, you know, products made out of endangered species, we'll detain them and then we'll turn them over to fish and wildlife.
Like, wait a minute, what? Like what?
Like sea turtle boots,
sea turtle boots?
Yeah, sea turtles are endangered, so people will make products out of the sea turtle shell or out of, and so we confiscate that. There's certain fish, there's certain, you know, certain animals that are on the endangered species list, so that if some people tries to, you know, import those, the same thing with, you know, FDA, if we encounter something that could be of interest to Food and Drug, we detain that. State and locals, if we intercept somebody who has a warrant, we detain them.
What do you do with all the stuff that you gather?
Some of it we turn over to that agency, and then they take care of it through their process. Other things, you know, we will, if it's like, for instance, if it's a vehicle, we take the narcotics out of it, and it still has value, we'll auction that off. If not, we'll crush it.
I want to know what you did with the sea turtle boots.
No, those are turned over to Fish and Wildlife, and I think I don't know if they destroy them or not, but yeah, the Fish and Wildlife
That's
is really,
really
adamant about
sick.
About the stuff that they protect. Also, just like I said, endangered species, and then on top of that, you know, we intercept birds trying to be smuggled in, and you know.
We don't have enough birds here. You have to smuggle a bird in?
Well, you know, like parrots and stuff like that from the Amazon. But again, we also have to be careful of Newcastle disease. If one of these birds has a disease and it gets away, it could just crush the poultry industry. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we do, a lot of moving parts at the ports of entry.
I can't believe, though. How long do you have to go through training to do your job?
Well, we go to the academy. It's about a 16-week academy. When we come back, you go through another 6 weeks, 16 weeks of post-academy training. And then once you're working, we put you on special teams like the X-ray teams, the canine teams, the agriculture teams, and you go through even more training. There's constantly training going on depending on what division you're working in.
It sounds like it's an evolving, constantly evolving. You have to stay one step ahead of the bad guy.
Exactly. It is a challenge.
Now, are all the people in blue on the ports of entry armed?
The agriculture specialists are not. The officers are, and they're the ones that you'll see on primary and secondary running the x-rays. The agriculture specialists are the ones that are looking for pests and disease in foods and fruit products and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, I've learned a lot today, and I hope our listeners have too. I want to remind everybody that Mod Pizza in Oro Valley is having a fundraiser today from 10:30 to 10 p.m., and we'll be out there selling blue light bulbs so you can show your support for law enforcement. And I want to thank you so much for being here.
I want to thank you, Sherry. Thanks so much.
Okay, you have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.